evening. My name is George Sinclair. I'm the pastor of Church of the Messiah, one of the people who will be trying to fill Alan's big shoes. I'd just like to say right at the front, it was such an honor to be asked. And Alan, I've been deeply appreciative of all of the things that you've done in this city and beyond throughout all these years. And it's a great privilege to partner with you and move, sort of continue your ministry on over these next few years. So it's, I'm very, very thankful for this, and I really appreciate all that you've done. Some of you might wonder how on earth an Anglican could be involved in something like this. Since I'm an Anglican, I'm allowed to sort of raise that issue right up front. In case you're wondering, this is how Anglicanism fits in with the different Protestant denominations. The Salvation Army picks you up out of the gutter. Baptists are very good at getting you formed and started the Christian faith. They get you baptized. Presbyterians, they are superb at educating Christians. Methodists are superb at creating a passion for holiness. And Pentecostals are superb at bringing Christians into a zeal for the Lord and a sort of a powerful singing type of worship. Anglicans introduce people to society and culture. And then the Salvation Army picks them up out of the gutter. I actually am not a cradle Anglican. I was raised in the Baptist Church. And so from a very young age, I heard the gospel. But for me, sort of in the words of Nicky Gumbo, the problem wasn't that I was an atheist or even an agnostic. I just found the Christian faith to be sort of boring and completely and utterly irrelevant and uninteresting. And I started to get involved in the counterculture, and it was the Jesus People movement of the late 60s and early 70s. That was the human agency by which I came to faith in Jesus Christ when I was in grade 12. And in 1980, through a series of circumstances, I stumbled into an Anglican church and sort of fell in love with the Anglican way of following Jesus. And I've been involved, I've been in the Anglican church first as a parishioner and then as a pastor ever since. I'm now the pastor of the Church of the Messiah. Our mission is to help ordinary people be confident, joyful disciples of Jesus Christ. Confident, joyful disciples of Jesus Christ. It's, of course, a connection of passages from Philippians, but preeminently, of course, the Great Commission in Matthew 28. And our vision is to build a prayerful Bible teaching, evangelical church, in the heart of the city, with a heart for the city and the world. About a year ago that we walked away from our building. In 2008, we felt that we could no longer stay as part of the Anglican Church of Canada because of their change in doctrine. And so we left the Anglican Church of Canada and stayed Anglican by connecting to the Anglican Communion through actually Anglican churches in the bottom half of South America. And that culminated with us walking away from our building about a year ago. And as we were preparing to walk away from our building, and it's always been an honor to lose a building for the gospel, right? I mean, you know, what matters more, a building or Jesus? I think for real Christians, that shouldn't really be much of a question. Was that old George Beverly Shea song, "I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold"? Like, I'd rather have Jesus than a building, too. So, about a year ago, and sort of up to it as we were preparing to walk away from our building and move to the Ottawa Little Theater, a verse in Acts, two verses in Acts, sort of kept coming to me over and over again. And it's from Acts 19, verses 9 and 10. But when some became stubborn and continued in unbelief, speaking evil of the way before the congregation, he, that's Paul, withdrew from them and took the disciples with him, reasoning daily in the hall of Tyrannus. This continued for 2 years, so that all the residents of Asia heard the word of the Lord, both Jews and Greeks. And part of that text has always spoken to me, the combination of reasoning and preaching, of sort of dealing with people's skeptical concerns and at the same time opening the scriptures to people. These are not two tasks at loggerheads with each other, but they, when done properly, should supplement each other, both reason and opening the scriptures. And just this verse kept coming to me and coming to me. So, you know, little would I know that 6 or 7 months after we walked away from our building, that I would be approached by Alan and Alma to consider being part of this radio team, which speaks to a lot more people on a Sunday morning than I do in my little church. And it's really neat. About a year ago, I got to speak on Pastor to Pastor with John Council on a Wednesday evening. And it was amazing the different people who heard me. My favorite coffee shop at the time is owned and run by a Muslim man, really fine man. One of the funny things about him is that when he took over the coffee shop, he brought back the Christmas tree, which is sort of funny. Like increasingly in our culture, if you want to be wished Merry Christmas on, you know, leading up to Christmas, it's often by somebody named Bashir or Muhammad or something, and not somebody named John or Fred or Sally. But that's the topic of another time. Anyway, Sam, this Muslim coffee shop owner, said, "Hey, I heard you on CFRA last night." And I thought, "You listen to Pastor to Pastor?" And he said, "I do. The only radio station I listen to is CFRA. As soon as I get up in the morning, I put on CFRA. I listen to CFRA all day." And when I was just into his coffee shop just on Tuesday, it turns out he sometimes listens to this radio show. If he has to come in to work and he's driving his car, he just listens to CFRA. So it's an amazing opportunity to open the scriptures and tell people about Jesus. And just a few things maybe about how you could pray, not only for me, but for all the speakers. One of the things I privately do as I'm preparing to preach is I ask God to make me deeply aware of the questions that both saints and skeptics would have about the text. Saints and skeptics often have some questions which can be quite different, but often saints are troubled by the questions of skeptics. And given that my mission statement is help ordinary people be confident, joyful disciples of Jesus Christ, it's good to know the questions that people have about the Bible. So one of the things you can pray for all of us is that as we're preparing our talks, is that we be aware of the questions that saints and skeptics would have about the text. And mindful of those questions, that we would be unashamed of the gospel and unashamed of the whole counsel of God. And that we can speak with simplicity and clarity, an apt word. And only God can do that. You know, only God can make a fallen person like myself or Juliet, don't want to insult you, or Brian Wall, just fallen sinners who've been redeemed by Jesus. And only God can bring the scriptures home to people, and only God can guide our lips and tongues so that our words can be apt, can speak to where people are. So please pray that as we speak, that God's Holy Spirit will fall on people who are listening, so that the Holy Spirit will bring them to both listen to the word and through our words, as uneloquent as they are, that they would want to know Jesus. That those who, they just want to know Jesus. One of the things I love about John the Baptist as part of my regular prayer is that John the Baptist said of Jesus, "He must increase and I must decrease." So another thing you could pray is that nobody will want to know more of George, or more of Brent, or more of Brian, or more of Juliet. It would really be God's work if people can't even remember who spoke, but they just want to know about Jesus. And if they don't know about us, but want to know about Jesus, then that's hitting the home run. So please pray for this. Thank you very much.